Kassad waved to them from the end of the dock, and they carried their luggage off the silent wind wagon. No one looked back.
"Empty?"
called Lamia as they approached the colonel. The tall man's cloak was still fading from its gray and black chameleon mode.
"Empty."
"Bodies?"
"No,"
said Kassad. He turned towards Sol and the consul.
"Did you get the things from the galley?"
Both men nodded.
"What things?"
asked Silenus.
"A week's worth of food,"
said Kassad, turning to look up the hill toward the tramway station. For the first time, the consul noticed the long assault weapon in the crook of the colonel's arm, barely visible under the cloak.
"We're not sure if there are any provisions beyond this point."
"Will we be alive a week from now?"
thought the consul. He said nothing. They ferried the gear to the station in two trips. Wind whistled through the open windows and shattered domes of the dark buildings. On the second trip, the consul carried one end of Mastine's Mobius cube, while Lenar Hoyt puffed and panted under the other end.
"Why are we taking the Urk thing with us?"
gasped Hoyt as they reached the base of the metal stairway leading to the station. Rust streaked and spotted the platform like orange lichen.
"I don't know,"
said the consul, gasping for breath himself. From the terminal platform, they could see far out over the sea of grass. The wind wagon set where they had left it, sails reefed, a dark and lifeless thing. Snow squalls moved across the prairie and gave the illusion of whitecaps on the numberless stalks of high grass.
"Get the material aboard,"
called Kassad.
"I'll see if the running gear can be reset from the operator's cabin up there."
"Isn't it automatic?"
asked Martin Silenus, his small head almost lost in thick furs.
"Like the wind wagon?"
"I don't think so. Go on. I'll see if I can get it started up."
"What if it leaves without you?"
called Lamia at the colonel's retreating back.
"It won't."
The interior of the tram car was cold and bare, except for metal benches in the forward compartment, and a dozen rough bunks in the smaller rear area. The car was big, at least 8 meters long by 5 wide. The rear compartment was partitioned from the front cabin by a thin metal bulkhead with an opening but no door. A small commode took up a closet-sized corner of this aft compartment. Windows rising from waist height to the roof line lined the forward compartment. The pilgrims heaped their luggage in the center of the wide floor and stomped around, waved their arms, or otherwise worked to stay warm. Martin Silenus lay full length on one of the benches, with only his feet and the top of his head emerging from fur.
"I forgot. How the fuck do you turn on the heat in this thing?"
The consul glanced at the dark lighting panels.
"It's electrical. It'll come on when the colonel gets us moving."
"If the colonel gets us moving,"
said Silenus. Saul Weintraub had changed Rachel's diaper. Now he bundled her up again, in an infant's therm suit, and rocked her in his arms.
"Obviously I've never been here before. Both of you gentlemen have?"
"Yeah,"
said the poet.
"No,"
said the consul.
"But I've seen pictures of the tramway."
"Kassad said he returned to Keats once this way,"
called Braun Lamia from the outer room.
"I think,"
began Saul Weintraub, and was interrupted by a great grinding of gears and a wild lurch as the long car rocked sickeningly and then swung forward under the suddenly moving cable. Everyone rushed to the window on the platform side. Kassad had thrown his gear aboard before climbing the long ladder to the operator's cabin. Now he appeared in the cabin's doorway, slid down the long ladder, and ran toward the car. The car was already passing beyond the loading area of the platform.
"He isn't going to make it," whispered Father Hoyt.
Kassad sprinted the last 10 meters with legs that looked impossibly long, a cartoon stick figure of a man. The tram car slid out of the loading notch, swung free of the station. Space opened between the car and the station. It was 8 meters to the rocks below. The platform deck was streaked with ice. Kassad ran full speed ahead, even as the car pulled away.
"Come on!"
screamed Braun Lamia. The others picked up the cry. The consul looked up at sheets of ice cracking and dropping away from the cable as the tram car moved up and forward. He looked back. There was too much space. Kassad could never make it. Fedmon Kassad was moving at an incredible speed when he reached the edge of the platform. The consul was reminded for the second time of the old Earth Jaguar he had seen in Alusis Zoo. He half expected to see the colonel's feet slip on a patch of ice, the long legs flying out horizontal, the man falling silently to the snowy boulders below. Instead, Kassad seemed to fly for an endless moment, long arms extended, cape flying out behind. He disappeared behind the car. There came a thud, followed by a long minute when no one spoke or moved. They were 40 meters high now, climbing toward the first tower. A second later, Kassad became visible at the corner of the car, pulling himself along a series of icy niches and handholds in the metal. Braun Lamia flung open the cabin door. 10 hands helped pull Kassad inside. "Thank God," said Father Hoyt. The colonel took a deep breath and smiled grimly.
"There was a dead man's break. I had to rig the lever with a sandbag. I didn't want to bring the car back for a second try."
Martin Silenus pointed to the rapidly approaching support tower and the ceiling of clouds just beyond. The cable stretched upward into oblivion.
"I guess we're crossing the mountains now, whether we want to or not."
"How long to make the crossing?" asked Hoyt.
12 hours. A little less, perhaps. Sometimes the operators would stop the cars if the wind rose too high, or the ice got too bad. We won't be stopping on this trip,"
said Kassad.
"Unless the cable's breached somewhere,"
said the poet.
"Or we hit a snag."
"Shut up. Who's interested in heating some dinner?"
"Look," said the consul. They moved to the forward windows. The tram rose 100 meters above the last brown curve of foothills. Kilometers below and behind, they caught a final glimpse of the station, the haunted hovels of Pilgrim's Rest and the motionless wind wagon. Then snow and thick cloud enveloped them.